So the normal state of consciousness, which is being immersed in thinking, is replaced by the state of attention. And that means the now is more important than past or future, because you realize it is life itself. In the normal state of consciousness, certainly past and future are more important than now. So the normal state of consciousness, which is unconsciousness, is characterized by that, the implicit assumption or belief that past and future are more important and more powerful than now. And then a moment comes when you realize the now is all there ever is. In truth, life can only be now. Then you honor life by honoring this moment. And then, whereas before the now existed in some obscure region on the periphery of your life, you were only peripherally aware of it because you were so absorbed in past and future. Now, past and future become peripheral. Yes, they still have, to some extent, they are needed to move in this world. You as this form, you can't get out of that where you seem to be flowing in that stream of time, which is like a train you're on and it won't stop. You can't get off. I recently saw people that I hadn't seen in 15 or 20 years. 20, I think it was. And it's a little shocking what time does to the human form. On that level, yes, it seems to exist. And I almost felt inclined to say, my God, what did time do to you? Yes, on the level of form, you as this form, you are subject to time. And subject to the impermanence which implies time, short-lived, fleeting, all forms. Everything, every form is quite fleeting. When you're totally identified with the form, you don't really know that. You only exist in a state of fear and desire because so identified. You don't know. And it's an amazing realization when you realize how fleeting all forms are. That knowing is already the beginning of liberation. Not as an intellectual fact or belief, but to see how short-lived all forms are. And when you grow older, you see it very clearly. When you reach the age of 60, 65, 70, 75, people around you begin to die, one after another. My mother says there's nobody left now that I know. They're all gone. And then, of course, you see it everywhere, in every natural form. Now, the seeing of that, when you see it, realize it, that is already liberating. Because that seeing arises from that which is beyond form. If the entire world were green, the color green would not exist, because there would be nothing to differentiate it from. If everything were fleeting, you wouldn't even know it. But the fact that you know means there's something that is not fleeting. And that is why to contemplate the short-lived, impermanent nature of all forms is already liberating. And when it's contemplated and allowed to be, and this may mean at this moment, a form that's right in front of you shows signs of the passing of time. It's become wrinkled. It could be a mango, it could be an apple, or it could be the human form. It's very similar what happens to an apple. It's what happens to the human form. What time does to an apple and what time does to a human. Very similar when you look a fresh apple and a fresh young 20-year-old. All shiny, and then time does its work, and 50 years later, which isn't very much, it's all wrinkled. And but with humans, there's the potential in that for the flowering of consciousness through the fading form. Now, I don't know about the apple. The apple can only speak for itself. But I know that for humans, that is a great potential is hidden here, and there's another portal here into the liberated state. And that portal is this form that is moving towards dissolution. Of course, all forms are. And suddenly you see it, not only here, but you see it everywhere. And when there's no reaction, you allow that. There's something incredibly peaceful in watching the form arise and dissolve. And that which knows that is beyond form. That is why there are certain works in literature, they never talk about anything that is beyond form, but they show you the impermanent nature of life, and they are spiritual works. It is already spiritual, you don't need to talk about anything that is beyond the impermanent nature. Just to show you the impermanent nature is spiritual, because it makes you into the seer of that. So there are the Shakespeare sonnets, talk a lot about how beauty fades, how quickly, what time does to it. And to read it can be a spiritual experience, because it puts you into the position of seeing impermanence. And even something that is not, you might think it's just entertainment, and on one level it is. Even there's a film like Titanic, where you see what all these forms that die, and at the very end they appear again like actors on stage. They played their role. And you see how death, it's, you're watching death. So one could say what we really talk about is death. A form dissolves. Death. Now there's a saying in a sacred scripture which says, die before you die. And there's deep truth in that, and in a way this is another perspective on why we are here, what this gathering is about. One could put it like this: death will find you, it's found you already, because we're all slowly dying. And eventually it'll catch up with you. It's now find death before it finds you. And that's the essence of spiritual practice, is finding death, embracing death, which is the end of identification with form, the end of deriving your sense of self, identity, from form. because that is the normal state of consciousness. And the identification with form is twofold. The physical form, identifying with the appearance of the body, and some people have that very strongly, that a large part of their sense of self is to do with identification with the physical form. And then you have the psychological form that you identify with as thought structures and emotions that accompany those thought structures, accumulated content of the mind, images of who I am, what the world has told me about who I am, the surrounding culture has told me about who I am. Or I may have reacted against what the surrounding culture has told me about who I am, but I'm still not free in that, because even the reaction is a conditioned reaction. So there's the psychological form of me, which is me and my story, which may be mostly a personal story. It may be mixed up with a collective story of us, me and my tribe, my nation, my religion. It's the story of me. That is the psychological form of me. And everybody has their story that is the me. And everybody knows that the me lives in a state of dissatisfaction with its story. It is a characteristic of the story not to be at ease or fulfilled for very long. It is not in the nature of that story-based identity to be at peace, fulfilled, or free. The very structure of it goes against that. The very structure of that kind of identity doesn't allow it. It's based on fighting something or someone, being at odds with something or someone. It's based on a sense of separateness. It needs that. So the identification with the body, sometimes they become very much mixed. You may identify with the appearance of the physical body, and that may, the mental images may form as me, as such and such. So especially people who have a beautiful body or good appearance, their psychological me is strongly bound up with their mental image of body. And for a while that gives people a very pleasant sense of self. Sense of self always is comparative, whether it's to do with body or with other identifications. You will compare yourself to others and then see where you fit in your identity. There is an attempt to be more than others in the story-based. And if you cannot be more because you're better, greater, know more, look better, are stronger, whatever it may be, if you cannot be more there, then what's left to you, you can be more miserable than others. And that also works. And some people have that strongly. If they can't create a satisfying identity in having more knowledge or more beauty or more physical strength or more money than others, then at least I can feel more miserable and have a self-image of one that has been treated unfairly by life. That's very satisfying. Because now you know who you are, so to speak. And then you seek to confirm that story-based, image-based identity by selectively interpreting life around you. You begin to see only those things that conform with your sense of identity. There's selective interpretations of reality and selective perception. And everything that you perceive as you move about your life is totally filtered and distorted then through the self-image of me. And only those things that conform to it are allowed in, that strengthen the self-image. And so everything is interpreted according to that. And you think that's reality, but it's the conditioned, heavy filters through which you interact with people. And then, so it becomes like a script in here that's been put into here, and you act it out. And that becomes then your life situation, your life drama, your life story. And you go through the movements looking for more of you through more, adding more, more future, never finding it. And then it could happen that you're suddenly confronted with death close to you, someone close to you, or the possibility of imminent death that might happen to this form, or you're suddenly confronted with great loss in your life, which is another form of death, something you had identified with, status, possessions, relationships, great loss, and suddenly forms dissolve, forms in which there was the self was in those forms, and those forms dissolve through some disaster, some form of death. And sometimes it affects even the mind forms with which you had identified, because the trauma and the shock is such that it shakes the mind, rigid mind patterns that before were running you and pretending to be you, and suddenly those also die. You don't know who you are anymore. You can't explain it anymore. Before, you thought you had these ready opinions when people asked you, and you would put out your opinions, you knew it all. And suddenly something comes, and suddenly the explanations don't suffice anymore. Death. That wasn't supposed to happen. Some religious people begin to doubt their beliefs when somebody close to them suddenly dies. That wasn't supposed to happen. I had a contract with God, and there was not supposed to be any death. Form dies. Thought forms die. And the whole story-based identity can come to an end in the face of great loss or death. Your whole story doesn't make sense anymore. It has any great loss or death in your life has that potential. But not always is that potential realized. It can also happen that great loss or disaster can make the story more heavy, more miserable, and more unhappy. But the greatest potential is always death, and wonderful portal is when a form dissolves. Or you see the dissolving form. It may not have dissolved yet, but it's moving there, so the portal is beginning to open. And suddenly, a form is gone, and it leaves a hole, an emptiness. Someone close to you dies, you lose your entire possessions, whatever it may be. a hole is left. There was the beautiful fabric of your existence, your life story. Maybe it was all in place, because some people, for a few years in their lives, they have it all arranged so neatly that you look at their lives and says, how is it possible? Everything in his or her life seems to work so well. It's rare, but occasionally you see it, it's like a picture book, a family, two children, both doing well, happy marriage, beautiful house, good job, promotions, status in society, two or three big cars. It's too much. Usually when you scratch and look beyond the surface, you find something else. But let's just say that yes, they are happy in that they have neatly arranged their life situation in such a way that everything seems to be working. And it's only a question of time before something in there collapses. Because the structures that they have created that look so solid, all these life insurance policies, all huge corporations are sustaining me with billions of dollars behind them, and I have shares in that. Surely my life is now secure, and my family's life is secure. There's a true foundation. And then time does something to the seemingly solid structures. It's such a shock when the disaster happened on September 11th. This huge structure, so solid. And it took only a few madmen, and they collapsed. And so, it's only a question of time before something comes in, and somewhere the solidity of those structures will reveal itself as illusory. It'll start to crumble somewhere. And if you've had 10 or 15 years living in the illusion that these things are so solid, then it's a great shock. You're not even prepared for it. That was supposed to happen. I was walking in the north of Los Angeles in a little park, and there was an old building that had burned down, was part of an estate, and it burned down 40, 50 years ago into a garden. There were only the ruins. Beautiful wild garden had grown up around it, trees growing inside the building, and this is, nothing is solid. Now, here in India, it's much easier to realize that nothing is solid. That's why we are here. And that's why this country has produced so many sages and enlightened beings. Because it's so obvious that things are not solid, and that it's so obvious that the physical structures are short-lived. And not, there isn't that sense of solidity around you. So I was walking there, and there was actually the city council of Malibu had put up a sutra as you entered the garden, and the sutra read, "Danger, all structures are unstable." And so I read the sutra and said, thank you. That's And then to walk there was a teaching, to see it's deeply, a deeply spiritual thing to walk around a decaying structure. It's returning, for it was form once, differentiated, and it's returning to into oneness. It's halfway between form and no form. Anything that is decaying is halfway between form and no form. And that's why when you are there and allow it to be and watch, it's liberating. It liberates you from form. So what could also liberate you from form is the realization that your own physical vehicle is subject to that. It may even be imminent. And that is a great portal to know that you have little or no future as this form identity. Of course, there's great fear in that. It can be, potentially, you could contract totally in a state of fear. But the potential is there for it to become an opening. And what arises, what then flowers through the decaying form is unconditioned consciousness. The form is decaying and the flowering is there. So I've seen it. There was a beautiful being in Vancouver, Joyce Frazee, passed away recently. She had come to many of our gatherings, and she herself had become an effective teacher. And her form, through an illness, began to dissolve. And as it began to dissolve, and she found it more and more difficult to move, she would still come to our gatherings. More and more, the light of consciousness was shining through the fading form. And looking into her eyes was beautiful. I hope somebody took a photo of her so that you can look into her eyes and see that the unconditioned, the light of the unconditioned was shining through her eyes and through her entire form. There was the, it was shining through. And that is the beauty, that is the death, when death comes, that's the greatest portal. And she was able to surrender to that, so it was open, wide. And it didn't matter anymore how much longer this form would be here. The flowering had happened. The fulfillment, consciousness flowering through this form. It happened. It doesn't need more time. It's flowered. It's the whole evolutionary impulse of the universe is towards that. Somehow, and I cannot explain it in words, it's beyond, we don't even attempt to fully, to really understand what is behind that. It is far beyond understanding. But just to say that there is the evolutionary impulse of the universe is behind that. Consciousness wants to flower through the form, the human. It will flower through any form. It doesn't say you are more worthy than this. I will choose this form because you are more worthy. It flowers where there is a transparency, where the form, the rigid mind structures give way. They die first. Identification with that me, mind-made self, goes. That, and this is why we're here, because as you sit here, you're finding death before death finds you. And these, the heavy, the mind structures that you identified with as me, the thought forms die. So the flowering is happening here before death finds you. You embrace death already. But it doesn't matter when it happens. And consciousness will move through. It could be a criminal, killed several people, inflicted suffering on others, and on, of course, on himself. And in that midst of hell, in his cell, waiting for execution, suddenly, inside, the entire structure of the self, mental, emotional structures, dissolves because the suffering is unbearable. And suddenly, something shines through. And now he doesn't care anymore whether the execution happens or not. And there have been cases like that. There was a woman in Texas 2 or 3 years ago who had killed 2 people with an axe. She had been a prostitute, a drug addict, and with her lover killed 2 people with an axe. And she was on death row for several years. And at some point, something happened in her, and surrender happened. And suddenly there was a being of great softness, beauty, through. There was not, the strange thing is there was not even guilt anymore, because guilt is still to be identified with unconscious movements as me, to derive your sense of self from the movement of unconsciousness and saying, I did that, that was me. She saw the dreadful nature of that, but it no longer disturbed her peace. Certain words that correspond to their language or culture. But when you look beyond the words, you will see that they all point to the same. And there are some of those to whom it happens who can't even speak about it. They just look at you, and you look at them. They may be uneducated, they may not have much to say. And yet you look and you see there's something that shines through that is deeper than a person, than any person could be. The personal dimension has given way to that. And so it is sacred when that happens. But so far it's been relatively few human beings to whom this has happened. No longer the case now. It is the destiny of all humans to go through that transformation. It is certainly your destiny, otherwise you wouldn't be here. The purpose of your life is to enable that to come through you, and it's happening already. So we embrace the death that is here when you surrender to what is. That's the greatest death. The resisting me entity gives way. You can surrender through suffering, or you can surrender through voluntarily through the yes to what is, which, as we saw yesterday, takes you beyond the form. You are no longer reactive to a form. So the yes, that simple thing, takes you beyond form.